209 Surf Street. We have, one of our members is missing tonight with an excused absence, but we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. Could we please have a moment of silence? All right, thank you. Please stand if you're able, face the flag, and begin the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any Planning Commissioner announcements? I have kind of a quasi-announcement, and I'm not really prepared on it, but there's an eelgrass meeting from the Morro Bay Estuary Program. I think it might even be tomorrow. Scott, do you know anything about it?
I'm sorry, I don't. Maybe I'll take a quick look, though, on their website to see if I can find that.
Okay. They're going to discuss, from what I know about it, they're going to discuss mediation or mitigation for eelgrass and the state of the estuary. So the public was invited to it, and I apologize, I don't have more information on it, but look it up on their website if you're interested. This is the time we have we open the meeting for public comment for items either not on the agenda, or if you can't stay for an item on the agenda, or for items on the consent calendar. So do we have anybody wishing to speak to the commission at this point? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment, period, and move on. We have no presentations, and moving on to the consent calendar, we have one item. Does anybody wish to pull any of the, or have a discussion on the item on consent? Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll move to accept the consent agenda.
Second?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Okay, now we'll open it up for item number B1. This is public hearings. So this is case CUP 19-04, and the site location is 839 Morro Bay Boulevard. And this is a coastal development permit and a conditional use permit to allow the demolition of the drive-through car wash and construction of a new project. So, do we have a staff report ready? Oh.
Need to get the presentation up.
Okay. Looks like we...
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem.
All right. This is application for coastal development permit and conditional use permit and signage exception for a drive-up coffee business called the Human Bean. This is on the site across the street from the police department. It's an existing car wash, was built in 1966. The existing building is 864 total square feet. The parcel is triangular and is 3,920 square feet in size. And the existing driveway configuration is approximately the same as what is proposed. The project is zoned C1 S4, Central Business District with a special design overlay. The Central Business Zone allows drive-through restaurants. S4 requires review to maintain and enhance the character of the area. This is also in the downtown waterfront strategic plan area, which has criteria that includes design guidelines, facade, signage, and lighting. And as you can see on this map, it is on the very end of the designated downtown waterfront area. The coastal land use plan area is land use area 7, which is central Morro Bay, with a land use designation of mixed use. And mixed use is defined as areas that encourage neighborhood and visitor serving commercial uses. This is the city development standards. In the first column are the standards, and in the column to the right is proposed building, and they are meeting or exceeding the requirements in every instance. And this is a site plan overlay on an aerial photo. It shows you the layout. It's a 600-square-foot proposed building with two service windows, has two drive-up order lanes that merge into one single pickup window lane, and the pedestrian order window is on the north side. This is enlargement of the floor plan of the building, and this shows the service windows, the coffee prep area, storage and supplies, and an ADA restroom. This is building elevations from the east, north, west, and south. And this shows design and exterior finishes with the materials, lap siding, board and bat, stone veneer, stucco, metal awnings, and a custom lighting wall sconce. And the narrative on here, it provide high quality materials and architectural elements, is from the Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan. Neighborhood compatibility. This is actually going to set the compatibility standards for future development. The area is really underutilized. It really doesn't have anything that draws the public down to that area. So it'll create an active use for an underutilized portion of the downtown and provide eclectic charm and small town character. And these are also goals of the Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan. This is a street view looking east. The police department is on the right side. It's got a double yellow line which allows left turns, and it has parking on both sides of the street, other than in front of the police department. The project signage program, we are recommending, and they have proposed signage that could be met with approval of 110 square feet in total. The municipal code allows 40 square feet based on the 40 lineal feet of building frontage. It's pretty restrictive for a business like this. The project proposed two wall signs for approximately 40 square feet, and they will be illuminated with LED illumination. They are also proposing directional signage, which is not counted towards the signage area limitations, but logos are. So the logos on these signs have been included for a recommended signage allowance of 10 square feet for logo portion of the sign. And menu signs, which are essential for a drive-up business to keep it flowing smoothly. In this project includes two menu boards, approximately 20 square feet in size, and 3 square feet of menu signs are not counted because that's considered essential, but I'm not sure that that was with drive-up businesses in mind. So an allowance of 40 square feet is proposed to cover both of the menu signs. And then finally, there's a monument sign that's included with an allowance of 20 square feet. The monument sign was not included with this proposal, so the monument sign would have to come back and go through the signage permit process. And with that, the staff recommends approval of the CUP and the CDP, which includes approval of the signage program pursuant to findings and conditions included in the Planning Commission Resolution 2-20.
Okay, thank you. Questions for staff?
Yeah, I had a couple. With respect to the do not enter sign, which strikes me as probably the most critical sign, is there some authority or policy that dictates, you know, where the sign goes? I'm just getting at that, something that ensures that it's in the right spot so that you actually avoid, you know, head-on collisions or people having to back out of the property after they've mistakenly gone the wrong way.
Well, the applicant is here, and they can speak to that if there's more information. But I think in here there's a driveway that allows you to go in and a driveway that allows you to go out. So a prominent location at the driveway that you don't want people driving into.
Yeah, it's not dictated by the city's codes, and it's not a vehicle code issue.
So it's the applicant's discretion. And the other question is, when I was looking at the traffic study, there wasn't any mention of of the eastbound traffic and a left turn lane. So I was assuming that the traffic study had decided that wasn't feasible or necessary. Is that a proper assumption?
Do you mean feasible to limit it? Because it's allowed. A left turn over the double yellow line is allowed.
No, I meant like at the gas station, there's actually a center lane where you could, you know, that turn lane, I guess, is what I'm...
I think the traffic study basically said that this type of business self-regulates. People don't stay in the street if there's no room in the driveway to pull in. They go to another place or they come back at a different time.
So the assumption is basically they didn't talk about this left lane because their expertise told them it wasn't necessary.
Correct.
Okay.
Just two things. One, housekeeping. Sorry?
It's on. Here.
It's not working. Oh, okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
One, just a housekeeping item. Exhibit A, the conditions. Where'd it go? I think it was C2. Probably want to update that. It's asking for some Title 24 forms, and if you could just take another look at what forms we're actually needing at final, no big deal. Just probably want to update that. The other thing was the queue. So I'm wondering if we need to have some sort of indication that the queue shall not impede the pedestrian right-of-way. So, I mean, if they end up queuing in the street or end up queuing, you know, off-site, just making sure that pedestrians can still walk up and down the street, I guess, was my issue.
So are you suggesting a condition?
I mean, that would probably – I don't know how to do that. Would that be the most appropriate way?
So are you suggesting that we have a sign where the cars would back up onto you that say, do not block sidewalk or something along
something
those lines?
Something similar to that. I mean, whatever the
– I mean, I've seen signs like that before, so it's not out of the question.
Maybe you can condition
it. But I would need, you know, some commentary from the remainder of the commission when we get to that point in the discussion.
Okay.
Any questions for staff?
I think Joe kind of addressed my question, which was about the traffic circulation analysis. It looks like it really just dealt with the queuing and not with traffic flow in both directions and the fact that we're really talking about left turns potentially going into and out of with blind curves and hills in several directions. So, but it didn't look like they addressed anything to do with traffic flow, traffic numbers, anything that was not part of their purview or anything we asked them to do.
Okay. We asked them to address the design and how mm-hmm. it would be affected with
within that lot, but not right. necessarily with our traffic patterns in our community. Okay.
We did have the project was reviewed by our Public Works Department, Engineering Division. They did take a look at it. One of the questions that was raised was, you know, is this an appropriate location for a left-hand turn pocket? That decision was made that it was not, given the configuration in the street and the width of the lanes and so forth.
Okay. Scott, did they specifically look at the exit point coming around? It seems like that's a pretty tight turn there, especially for a pickup truck, say a pickup truck with a camper.
trying to look back over the right-hand side to see traffic coming, like, up Morro Bay Boulevard there. Have they mapped that out to see if a normal-sized SUV or pickup could come out to that approach and look back over their shoulder to see if traffic is visible? That's one of the things I'm concerned with, the traffic flow.
So I'm not sure I understand. Are you saying when they're exiting going east?
Yeah, can we do the can we bring up the site plan? Maybe that shows the traffic. Okay, I guess that's the best we can get. Okay, if that car comes out, that's not quite to scale according to the drawings, the measured drawings. It's a much sharper angle, and so traffic coming out to the approach there in the driveway, you're going to be looking back like 60 degrees behind you to see traffic coming east on Morro Bay Boulevard. So I didn't see the traffic study address that at all, especially if you're in a pickup truck, you have a camper, you're towing a boat or something, or just a normal large car that doesn't have clear view out the back. You're not going to be able to see it out the mirrors, and you're not going to be able to see it turning back over your shoulder. So I was wondering if my question is, has somebody addressed that specifically?
Well, no, and as you pull out of the drive-through space and turn into the driveway to make your turning movement out of there, you won't be at that severe angle that you're lined up with there. You'll be able to turn and look up and down, or down the street, whichever direction you want to go. You're not going to be coming out at that sort of angle, continuation of the angle of the driveway.
It's not that big of a radius there if you look at the measured drawings. Here it's out of scale.
I'm looking at the plan.
Yeah, the measured drawing, that's my concern. It just looks like because of the angle there, you're going to be at a, you know, like a 70, 65 or 70 degree angle to the street. So it's hard to look back over your shoulder, and if you have any blockages in your view, that's not the most visible out for most vehicles, for a lot of vehicles. So I'll bring this up in comment. That was my question, was that, is if that had been studied specifically.
No, not specifically that I'm aware of, but I also think that you can pull out of this and see both directions without much of an issue. There's enough room there.
Okay. At this point, we'll open it up for public comment. Would the applicant please like to step forward?
Good evening, Commissioners. Pamela Giardini, and I'm the agent for the applicant, Pat and Vicki Mitchell, Moss Ventures, LLC, and the project architect, Larry Gabriel, is here tonight in case you have any questions for him. Basically, staff did a really good presentation tonight on going over all the details. Just in reviewing a couple of your questions that came up, starting with the car that's exiting, the radius of the landscaped area by the city's code has to be a minimum radius, and so we meet that. And then as you come out, it almost follows the pattern that exists there. The car would turn and be 90 degrees perpendicular to the street, which would give them visibility going left or right. The existing brush that's down at the most triangular portion of the lot is going to be removed. We are keeping the trees, so that'll add to better visibility when going back out into traffic, too. The traffic study did look at an area-wide view. The Associated Traffic Engineers had done, we actually waited for them to complete their reviews on, it's in the report here, I'm sorry, it's Ventura, Oxnard, and Thousand Oaks. And so we waited for them to finish their studies on those three locations, and then they use the data from those locations to apply here. They did look at whether or not a left-hand turning lane needed to be provided. They determined that it did not, that the peak flows in AM, PM would be handled by the queuing, and we actually queue 9 cars, which is quite a bit, and that we can put up signs if the commission wishes that, you know, make sure you don't block the sidewalks. The areas, the three places in Ventura, Oxnard, and Thousand Oaks do have a greater population than here, and so I think some of their queuing is probably a little bit more in excess than what you would expect here, but it was the standard we were held to nonetheless. And I think that's it, unless you have more questions for me.
Okay, we'll hear from the rest of the public and call you back up for questions later.
Okay, great.
Okay,
thank you.
Would anybody else like to speak to this item?
Good evening, Betty Winholtz. Just 4 questions that I had, and one of them was answered by the previous speaker, and that was whether or not the street tree was going to be retained or not, and it sounds like it will be. Hope that's a guarantee. A second one was I was curious that the approach was west to east rather than east to west, because that's how the car wash flows now, and that seems to work when you go in, or if when you used to go in and use that car wash. It seems awkward doing the left-hand turns that way, and so I'm wondering what the rationale is for that, or if it's a better traffic flow if you go east to west. My third question or area of concern was I know that we already have a number of drive-throughs, and since this was a car wash where the car comes in, stops, so there's no running engines, and this will create a number of running engines, particularly if you have a lineup of cars, how does that fit with the APCD evaluation of our air pollution, and if that's something that was looked at? I did not see it in the staff report. And so I have a question about air pollution, and I had a 4th one. I didn't write it down. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Would anybody else like to speak to this item? Okay. Seeing none, we'll have the applicant please come step back up.
Sure. Pamela Giardini, agent for the applicant again. As to the approach, the driver's side, so you have to drive up and have your driver go to the building on that side, and so that's why the approach is the way it is. Sometimes we overlook the obvious. I had a Habit restaurant in Atascadero, and they wanted to lower the grade. Well, what was going to happen is the car was going to be way down there. So, you know, sometimes things don't seem as obvious as they are. So that's the reason on that. As far as running engines, we do have 2 of these going in Fresno and Clovis. We did have APCD review on them, and it was negligible. And so I, even though we didn't have one here, I'm sure it would come out with the same result. And so just wanted to let you know that and see if there's any other questions.
Okay. I'm sure we do. Susan. Okay. Jesse, any questions? Joseph?
So again, my question was about that do not enter sign. It just seems that by inclination and maybe habit, people will have a tendency to turn into the property traveling west at the first driveway, and so the sign has to be really clear. And I can imagine where somebody's absentmindedly pulls in, realizes they've made a mistake, and then they're forced to sort of back up into traffic. The alternative is they make what I'd call like a false move. They intend to turn in, they're still on the street, they realize they shouldn't, and they come to a sudden stop or a slowdown, and it creates problems for the people behind them. So I was really concerned that whatever sign or signs you put up clearly indicate do not enter before people have made any physical movement to enter the property.
I think you bring up a very good point, because as the lady who spoke before me, since people were used to the other flow on the car wash, that they might have an inclination to do that. I think do not enter signs would be really good, and a big painted arrow showing it just coming out too, maybe. And I don't know if that gets included in the sign ordinance or not. Every jurisdiction is a little different on what they include in or not, but your planning commission could adopt that inclusion into the sign ordinance tonight if you so desire to do that. More than willing to put them up.
Okay, I've got a couple questions. How are you going to evaluate the signage on these internally lit signs so that they meet the dark sky requirements of Morro Bay?
Oh, I have a technical person here who could answer that. How's okay. that?
Bob, is that you or Larry?
I'm looking for a picture.
Oh.
They want to know how the menu signs will not affect the internal dark skies. The dark skies.
That's a good question, too.
I can pose another question here. Can you guys hear me? What are the proposed hours? What time would you guys close?
5 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay. And then also while he's looking that up, on your landscape plan, I didn't see a designation for the paving materials.
I don't know. Let me check.
You know, I think I probably missed it, but...
Because nowadays the stormwater runoff is so... strict, we end up using a bunch of pavers, and so I don't know if it's all asphalt or asphalt and pavers. It'll probably be as many pavers as needed to meet the stormwater runoff, because then it's permeable versus non-permeable.
And seeing as the minimal landscaping that you're going to be putting in there, I'm going to be recommending that all the paving is pavers, minimally pavers. So, and the other thing too is there's about a 14-foot eucalyptus, you know, caliper stump there that had like a 200-foot tree, 150-foot high tree there. How are you going to handle that?
Is that that's in the upper left-hand corner?
It's in the upper corner there, the eastern corner.
That's going to come in. I can tell you from personal experience and being a degree in landscape architecture, eucalyptus trees are not the greatest tree to keep around. They tend to break and fall off, and the limbs and
it's just the stump
things.
There now. The
oh,
tree got cut down.
Pat Mitchell. I'm one of the owners.
Please state your name. And
Pat Mitchell with Moss Lane Ventures.
Great.
You're talking about the one that's placarded there, the stump that's we plan on keeping that and fixing up the area around it. It doesn't impact what they're doing. It's out on the point, so it doesn't impact the area, the development area we're talking about. We were just out there about an hour ago, and we were talking about that, and we realized that there's no way that we're going to be removing that.
You might make it a bowl or something, a skateboard.
But I think it needs to be fixed up. It's really overgrown in that area. And so we were talking, there's a small tree that needs to be removed and some bushes, and I think it needs to more be highlighted for what it is, you know, the historical significance it has.
Yeah. Okay. It is something that's going to need to be dealt with, and I didn't see it dealt with anywhere in the drawings. So,
we'll include it in the drawings for sure.
Okay. And then... do you have any reservations against eliminating the internally lit signs?
Eliminating what?
The internally lit signs for both the menu signs and the...
We're going to have illuminated signs. I'm not familiar with this, ordinance you're talking about, so we're just going to have to look at it and make the brightness of them acceptable. You know, they're going to have to be visible to the customer that's pulling up, obviously.
You can top light signs and make them visible. You don't have to internally light them.
Okay.
you know.
I see what you're saying.
So what you get is you get a glare factor. You get, you know, there's no way you can directionalize, if that's a word, an internally lit sign that to eliminate the illumination from going up.
Part of the sign is electronic, and so it changes electronically. So I think one of the panels, you know, and so it would have to be lit from the inside, obviously, because it's electronically programmed.
It may not be the appropriate sign then. So, okay, well, do you have another? I see your consultant stepping up. Does he have a solution for this?
Larry Gabriel, architect in Paso Robles, California. For the lighting, there's obviously several other ways we can do it with external lit lighting. We haven't been asked this question on the other six projects that we're working on, so we'll respond to your question and your ordinance, and we'll do what we can do to make that. I don't think that's an issue. I do have an issue with the full pavers in the driving lane. If you can bring our site plan back up. We have increased greatly the amount of landscape from this site compared to what it was before. Our building is two-thirds the size, and we have probably two-thirds as much asphalt here as we did before. Mm-hmm. So we're going to meet the bioswale and the runoff and everything that has to happen for treating the water and getting it off-site. And if we need to put pavers in, we would probably do it at the parking area only is generally how we do this. So we don't have to run the pavers on if somebody's driving on it every day. That's normally how we approach these things without doing the full driveway and the full parking stalls and everything in pavers. So it's not going to be required to meet the water runoff. And so don't quite understand the requirement for demanding that we have pavers everywhere.
It'd be a compatibility and also it'd be a design issue.
A more compatibility
so.
With...
To eliminate asphalt driveways as much as possible, so it'd be more design. It'd be more design consideration than a. You're going to need to, by code, you're going to need to meet the water runoff, the stormwater standards.
Correct.
But also, this is a gateway project to our city, so we have the capability of imposing design considerations into the project.
Okay, so. We've not been okay. So nobody brought that up to our attention.
Okay, well that's why this in the planning. That's our job here at the planning department, at the planning commission, to look at that also. So,
okay,
because of the area it's in, we have design responsibilities to look at also. So that's all. Okay.
Thank you for that input. There is a difference between a driveway, and if you look at this as similar to a parking lot for a grocery store or for a convenience store, your decisions, although discretionary, do have to be based on reasonableness. Mm-hmm. And we are increasing, believe it or not, the landscaping on this site, exceeding the minimum requirements established by your own municipal code. And we will be doing pavings to accommodate the stormwater and the runoff. And you can see there's quite a few pavers on the site as is. And the requirement to pave the entire driveway area, when you have cars go over that, it just tends to pack it down and not be the use that you think it's being used aesthetically or for permeability. But the other thing is that within reasonableness is, are you requiring other places in their parking lots, which this would be similar to have pavers? And so I understand the design review, but I think you need to take into consideration the cost. And is this what's been required across the board of other projects? Other than that, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, we have another question here.
I have another question.
Bob Bachon with Moss Lane Ventures. Okay. Regarding the signs, we can get back to you on that, but understand that this is a franchise. Currently, the website, if you go on the website, it's in 10 states with over 79 locations. Right now, we're in 13 states. Okay. And over 85, we all use this. What I'm getting at is we all use the same signage, same as Dutch Bros, Starbucks, et cetera. Yeah. So they do not shine through. It's an opaque white, so it just glows.
Okay.
But we'll get you details on that.
Okay, that would be great.
Thank
and
you.
Just we've had this argument that that we're supposed to bow to the corporate standards, and I don't believe that's my job. Here, my job is to protect the community, not bow to corporate standards.
Just a rebuttal. What I was getting at, I guess.
Please come to the mic.
Yeah, what I was getting at on just a rebuttal was the fact that this is a standard within the company, not only the company, but other states, other communities in large. So again, we'll conform with whatever your regulations are and your standards, but we'll get back to our corporate to let them send us all of the details of the signage.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Jesse?
So I'm a little not following the...
Bad mic.
Here.
So I'm not following the accessibility path from the walk-up window to the public way. Could you elaborate on how that doesn't cross the vehicular path there?
It does cross the vehicular path.
Okay. Is that going to be something we have an issue with, Scott?
We could come up on the right-hand side, cross in front of the trash enclosure to the window there.
Okay, so there is room to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the paver issue, so I'm going to kind of weigh in there. So I'll speak for building codes. So it won't be acceptable probably to use that in the accessible parking spot as well as the accessible parking stall offloading area. Due to accessibility standards. But I do share the chair's concern here with making that look a little better than it does. I mean, I don't really love driving by there and looking at what it looks like now, so I'm hoping we can make it look much better, which I presume you guys will because I like what I see so far.
Uh-huh.
So I think if I can speak for myself anyway, if it's not pavers, maybe just a colored concrete or some kind of other standard that's just not going to be black asphalt. You know, I don't know that we can condition it that way. It just would be a preference of mine. So,
thank you for your input on the pedestrian walkway. You actually, I think, brought up a good point. And again, the pavers are not something that we planned on proposing. Any other questions?
Okay, I think we're okay. Do you have any further comments?
No, thank you. Oh,
okay.
We do.
Okay.
The owner says he's willing to look to investigate and use colored concrete for the drive and the parking area, if you guys are agreeable to that.
That'd be much better than black asphalt.
Yes.
Yes. It'd also be better for temperature control. And just for, you know, for your illumination, the proposal for Sonic, they upped their pavers to almost, I think it was almost 100%. For their drive-through, and that was a requirement we had on them. So we're not singling you out, or we're not, you know, just doing this willy-nilly. So, okay, I'll bring it back to the commission. Was there any further questions? Okay, great. We'll leave it public comment open then.
I think the question is for Scott.
Okay.
The prohibition against back. Lit signs, was that only for the Embarcadero, or does it even exist?
It doesn't currently exist. It is in the draft sign ordinance for businesses down on the waterfront in the Embarcadero. Internally illuminated signs are allowed elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they're still, okay, Scott, they still need to comply with night sky requirements?
Yeah, our documents, you know, request that they do that, correct?
Okay, discussion?
I love the idea of having any sort of improved development in that, as you say, gateway area to the town, especially. I'm really concerned with the traffic flow on this project. I walked back and forth and back and forth, and I drove by it a few times. We have the hill going up, and then it goes down again. There's a curve coming in. There's Kern coming out. I feel like we're asking for a lot of awkward left turns. I'm really surprised that that the Public Works Department said that a left turn lane wasn't needed. I would consider taking out the parking places adjacent to the project so that somebody pulling out has a merge lane. Cars can come in pretty fast off the roundabout going down that hill. And we tend to think of ourselves as this sleepy little town. But on any busy weekend, a holiday weekend, a day when we're having some kind of event, the mornings as people are commuting, it's busier than you think. I come out of Kern frequently, even just trying to make a right turn, and have to wait for traffic that's coming in different directions. The gas stations are busy. We also are planning on growing as a community. We're planning on putting in, hopefully, a beautiful hotel and mini conference center down at Market Street. That's going to create more traffic flow. So I feel like we're potentially approving something that's going to create problems that take us so long to then back up and catch up and solve until somebody gets hurt. So, you know, I like to see these projects happen. I'm very pro-business and trying to make it work for businesses. But this is just a really awkward design to me. So those are my thoughts. I'd really like to see us look at a more serious traffic study.
Jesse?
Sure. I'll borrow this. I had that initial thought as well. And I sat and looked at this over and over and over again. And the more I thought about it, the more that Sunday morning Starbucks line at Albertsons seemed out of place, and maybe we can just—we need some other place. So I mean, there are a lot. We really need a drive-through coffee place. I mean, that's kind of been—I've thought that since I got here. that's just a personal thing. I mean, I live here, and I need—you know—I mean, I was concerned with that as well. But as long as, I mean, I don't sit there and study that area every day, but it seems like no one really parks in front of that car wash ever. So, I mean, if we did need to queue in the street, which I'm not really jazzed about, I think this traffic study was accurate in saying it'll self-regulate. And in other words, if you have 9 people waiting to get into the human being, then you'll just drive to Starbucks, or you'll drive to The Rock, or you'll drive to one of the other coffee places we have in town to get your coffee. And I think I would do that. I don't think I would sit in traffic. I tend to want to believe what they're saying. I love the design. I think it looks great. I think you guys did a great job in putting this together. And the right turn issue aside, I mean, if you had a bigger lot there, I'm sure you would have done a different design. But I think you did with what you did with, or you worked with what you had, and you made it work. I'm in favor of it. Is it the best design I've ever seen? No. But like I said, it's a constrained lot, and I'm glad they're doing something with it rather than a broken down car wash that never works. So I'm for it.
Likewise, I'm very enthusiastic about business development for an undeveloped part of the city. And I'm particularly enthusiastic that you made good use of some of the design guidelines in terms of the batten board and the siding and the stacked rock. I like the design. I do wish I could be a little more enthusiastic in my liking of the design, and I was hoping that our resident expert, Mr. Lucas, would be here, but of course he isn't. So I have no expertise at all in architecture except my own peculiar taste. So I'm not going to comment on that further other than to say I wish I'd liked it more. I'm not even sure what I would suggest that would be not place an undue financial burden on the applicant. I really don't know, but I'm just throwing that out. Obviously, I had a concern about parking, not parking, rather the queue, but I'm willing to defer to, you know, experts, more expert than myself. So if there's an expert opinion that says it doesn't merit a left-turn lane, I'll defer to that. I am in favor of not having these kinds of interior lit signs, and despite the fact that we don't have an ordinance to that fact, I think it still falls under the rubric of design guidelines. And the proposed, I've argued this before, the proposed statute is a sort of a comprehensive listing of what our community value-based design guide selections should be and will be, and we're, I think, empowered to sort of require those at this point. And I'm much in favor of something other than black concrete, so I think that was a very good suggestion. I also thought it was a very good suggestion about not requiring the pedestrians, disabled pedestrians, to, you know, cross in front of driveways.
Okay. One of the things we do have in our ordinance, in our present sign ordinance, is the not to allow electronic signage. So we've had, and we've restricted them to open and closed signs. I'm referring to the Limos project, for one. So the consistency on that, you know, we've got a basis for that. My comments on this, I like the idea of what you're doing there. I really do, and I think the design is appropriate for what's going on. It'll enliven that lot. I appreciate the design constraints you had on this project. It's a tough, you know, it's a tough shoehorn fit, and to make it all work. And I think you did a pretty good job on it. So, you know, take my comments, you know, not so much as criticisms, but more looking after the community. The things I'm concerned about are, you know, basically, you know, I'll go there, the tackiness of internally lit signs, especially being seen from the streets. You know, they're not necessarily what we want to portray on at our gateway to the community. I think they can be handled a lot better with a top lit sign. We don't get the glare. You don't get the glare from the street. You don't get the glare up into the sky for our night, and also for our night sky, dark sky ordinance. I'm not so much concerned about the queuing coming in. I am concerned about the reversal of traffic flow, because, you know, we've got a lot of people set in their ways here, probably me one of the most. And then also I'm concerned about visibility. I drive a pickup truck. A lot of people drive pickup trucks. A lot of people drive vans. And coming out of that, exiting that coming onto the street, I just don't think you have enough room. And I don't think people, if they're turning left onto Morro Bay Boulevard, I don't think they're going to turn to do a 90-degree and then come back around and look and make a left turn. I think that's just really an awkward movement. I would almost rather see the driveway approach moved further west, so they're forced to come at more of a 90-degree to end up at a 90-degree before they enter the street. So I'd like to have that looked at, and what I would recommend is that we have a specific, either in-house or a specific traffic study to look at these problems that I see with the site.
So I think it can be solved. I'm not against it, but I think that needs to be addressed, and I don't think it was addressed at all. So Scott, what would the suggestion be?
I'm happy to take a look at moving the approach. Remember, this is it's a one-way driveway, so
right.
there is room. I'm happy to look at it from an engineering standpoint. We'll sit down with our public works department and go over that specifically to see if they think it would improve access on the street. So I'm happy to do that. We can add that as a condition, and happy to put that into the public works section.
See, the one thing that concerns me too is that we have a lot of bicyclists or kids going, still thinking that they need to ride on the wrong side of the street. And if somebody's sitting there at a 45-degree angle, they're not going to see a bicyclist coming up on that side of the street. So, yeah. So, Susan?
So, I'm not at all concerned about the queuing. What I'm concerned about is somebody coming east on Morro Bay Boulevard, stopping because they're going to make a left-hand turn into the entrance to this place, and cars are coming up the hill behind them, and then cars are coming towards them, and I feel like, and that's our police department right there. Mm-hmm. So, and then our fire department's right down here. So I feel like we're setting without some kind of left turn lane or some kind of emerging lane, we're setting ourselves up for a real problem. I mean, if this is a popular place, it could be a very successful business. It doesn't make sense to me. People tend to get the coffee in the morning and they're leaving town to go to work somewhere else because that's most of Morro Bay's people, I guess. So they're going to be coming up the street, making a left turn into there, then another left turn onto the boulevard to head to the roundabout. Or they're coming into town to work here and they're again crossing the path of that exit lane and doing this loop. I just worry about the safety of it.
Commissioner Stewart, that's specifically
Excuse me, we closed public comment.
Oh, I thought you still had it open.
We'll open it back up. Go ahead. Well, just allow me to open it back up at this point. And go ahead and answer her question.
Sure.
Thank you.
Commissioner Stewart, that's the reason we hire a traffic study person. It was on the recommendation of staff because they had concerns about the flow too. And one of the reasons the traffic study took so long to get done is because they came back to us and said, we're studying these three locations for drive-ins in Oxnard, Thousand Oaks, and I forgot whatever the other one was, Ventura. And so they wanted to base their recommendations on this specific site, having very accurate queuing studies, very accurate queuing times. And the left-hand turn lane was brought up to us by staff early on. And so they were directed to look at that. When they look at that, they look at the flow. I mean, you'd be amazed at the numbers that are generated on traffic flows on streets and what data is available. And so they take all that into account and then they come up with their recommendations. And it's not, how can I say that? They're an outside consultant. Their liability, their reputation is on the line. And so they have to come up with and by analysis determine what the recommendation was. If their recommendation had been a left-hand turn lane, I don't think we would have gone forward this project because we wouldn't have been able to accommodate it. But we did give them the time to do the other studies so that we would have current data to bring into this report to alleviate those concerns. And I understand the city is growing, but it was looked at by a Associated Transportation Engineers.
But they didn't look at Morro Bay. They looked at three other cities in other places.
They took that data to establish the queuing times and the amount of queuing. Then they looked specifically at Morro Bay because we forwarded to them staff's comments. Mm-hmm. Staff had written in their first and second completeness review letter, concerns about the left-hand turning lane. So that was specifically sent to them. So they did have to look at Morro Bay Boulevard specifically, whether a left-hand turning lane was needed. They look at intersections to see impacts to intersections, the accounts on the street that day, that kind of stuff. So they did bring it to this project, to this specific area, this specific plan. That's what they're hired to do. And so I feel like, it was something that we wanted to have done, to know that this was a viable project for us, too, in that sense.
You want to close that? I'm starting to share your concern, and I'm thinking about Labor Day. I'm thinking about 4th of July, and I'm thinking about somebody trying to turn left into that queue, and the queue's full, and they're stopped in traffic because they have nowhere else to go other than up and around. So I'm wondering if the solution isn't no left turns. I mean, I'm not saying they have to provide the left, I'm not sure what the term is, but the turn lane in the middle of the two lanes, but just don't turn left there, go around the block and come up Kern and turn. Yeah, or something like that. I'm starting to agree with you because if we have people queued on Morro Bay Boulevard trying to make that left into their parking lot and can't get in, they're going to stop and wait.
They're even just going to be stopped there because oncoming traffic is coming through. So they're going to be stopped on the boulevard, waiting for oncoming traffic to finish so they can make the left turn, whether there's a queue or not. That's sort of irrelevant to me.
Right. And I mean, no offense to your consultants, but I mean, we live here. We know what it's like. We know how it gets on Memorial Day and every day in the summer. We have a lot of tourists in here. We're a lot bigger than a town of 10,700 people. When we have the tourists in town, and I'm starting to agree that that may be a problem. So,
I think my only statement is that the traffic study is based on science and facts, and I understand your concerns. They were told specifically to look at that, and they did, and they addressed it in their report. I agree with the report in that if it's queued up, they'll probably just pass on and go to the next one. I mean, you've got one right down the road just a little bit. And so I don't know how to alleviate your concerns any more than providing the study that was provided to you.
Okay. I think what we need to do is have Scott, it seemed like you had something you might want to say to this.
So the study doesn't overtly analyze the left-hand turn movements there.
Yeah.
It does say, given the estimated trip generation, the two project driveways will operate acceptably without right turn in and right turn out only restrictions, meaning you can cross the traffic lane into the other lane, making left-hand turns out of there and in there. But it's not overt in its analysis of that. Again, our public works department did look at it, and city engineer looked at it and didn't have an issue with it not having a designated left turn lane. We don't have data as it relates to what it would look like if it had one, whether that would be an appropriate, improvement there. I don't know that that's the case. I would not advocate that the planning commission try to put a condition on there because it might be unenforceable, because that would ultimately be up to the city's traffic engineer, which is Rob Leivick.
I'm sorry.
So if you want information to be brought back to you, that can happen, and you can simply continue the item and make the request and have them evaluated, and then we'll have our engineering division look at it as well and see if they agree with the recommendations that would come out of that. Or you can simply condition the project to have us look at it, and we can do it internally. It's kind of up to you. If the majority of the commission isn't comfortable with it, then I would suggest that you continue the item and ask for the request to have the left-hand turn pocket analyzed and prepared in a report, because this report does not do that.
Okay, great. I'll allow this comment and then.
Okay, Larry Gabriel, back again. I've got three short comments. Number one is I'm looking at the visual, and if there's a hill there that's alleviating or blocking from seeing a car that is stop and making a left-hand turn, the hill would be greater than that. You wouldn't see that car that you're looking at right there. So I don't know the severity that you're talking about in that hill. It doesn't seem to be as severe as is mentioned.
Okay.
Secondly, you guys had mentioned about everybody's geared to go in that first driveway. That business there was making less than $27,000 a year, so I don't know how many people are going to that car wash that's going to go there automatically, make a right-hand turn. Seems very minimal to me that was an unsuccessful business and just losing business as it goes. Thirdly is we can have our engineer put in a turning radius on a graphic to show you what a turning radius is in a car, and we can easily find out how close to 90 degrees we can get at that driveway. So we can add that to our plans easy enough. And so that would bring it back to staff and do whatever adjustment we can do to do that.
Okay.
We have to also get access to the trash enclosure, and so that puts the width of the driveway there, and you know it's kind of up to the patron to, you know, be a smart driver and get as close as they can to 90 degrees and take, you know, look for traffic. So, but we'll happily do that for the staff.
And that was the exercise we were going to have them go through, was to show us the turning movements and how they line up.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Go ahead.
One other comment, Pat Mitchell. If you look where that curb cut is, it actually forces you to be almost at a 90-degree angle. The curb cut is quite a ways back from the edge of that property, from the pointed edge of the property. Mm-hmm. And so we designed this thing so that when they pull out of that window and pull out, they're almost at a 90-degree angle.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. We'll close public comment at this point and bring it back. Okay, so where we're at is I think we need more information. We need more information on the turning radius on the exiting point, and if they can prove that or if they can show that, then that's great. We need more information on the safety of the left-hand turn going in and the right-hand turn, you know, kind of going out. So. The question is, do we want that information to come back to us, or do we want to allow staff to review it, have them move the project forward a little bit faster?
Yeah, well, I'm certainly comfortable with the staff doing it. I think I've expressed the same concern, but nevertheless, we are, you know, working with experts. And so, but you know, expert opinion gets much more conservative when it has to be explicit. So if there is a statement from the traffic consultant saying that there's no undue safety hazard presented, or from the city department that says something to the same effect, I think that's satisfactory. But and I certainly feel...
I just feel like they addressed the queuing and they did not address the traffic flow. So.
No, that's what I'm saying. It needs to be... I'm not saying that they addressed it currently. They didn't. I mean, they may have addressed it, but they didn't make anything explicit in the report. And I think we do well to have something explicit in any report that we have, be it from the consultants or from our own city department.
Scott, hypothetical situation here. So we approve this today, mm-hmm. and Mr. Leivick finds at a future date that the queuing for the left-hand turns is becoming a problem. Could he, at that point, prohibit left-hand turns into that?
Yes, he could. And that's exactly what would happen.
Okay.
We would prohibit left-hand turns if it became an issue from a traffic standpoint. But, you know, you raise a valid concern. You have to read between the lines to see that it was ever envisioned. It does look like they, in you know, a roundabout fashion, were looking at it in some respect, but it wasn't specifically analyzed. So I'm happy to do that part of it. But yes, to answer your question, certainly that's probably how we would address it if there was a problem. If we were running into issues, we were having accidents there, or cars continued to, you know, weren't able to, were stopping there and it was creating traffic issues, then yeah, that's probably exactly what we would do.
Okay. A couple of things. So if we're going to continue this, I'm not sure we are. So we had to talk about the elimination of the signs, the turning radius. And I had this is a silly question, and I'm sorry I have to ask it. So, I don't know why this isn't done more in the United States, but in Japan, you have really small cars and really tight turns, and they use mirrors. And I've never understood why we don't do that here. But I'm wondering if that's something we can consider if we find that the turning radius isn't such that it's...
I have actually seen those used on facilities in the past. Likely they realized they had sight distance issues, and that's why they used them. I think they're going to be fine as they exit here. I think they'll be able to configure the driveway and the location of it. I think it'll probably end up being fine. But I mean, certainly we'll look at it if that's the desire of the Planning Commission.
One last thing. I want to make sure we get this in. So if we could also figure out a way to make sure we get the colored concrete as they specified, they would be willing to do so.
So if you don't mind, I'll just review the things that I'm going to add to the conditions, or do you want
to? I've got maybe adding to that. Okay. Seeing as we're giving them like a 230% increase on their allowable signage, you know, that's, they're asking for, if I understand this correctly, they're asking for 110 square feet, and they're allowed 40 square feet, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So because of that, we, you know, if nothing else, if there is no other basis, we can condition that use for that additional square footage of signage to allow that extra, because we don't have to allow it according to our regulations.
Effectively, yes, you have discretion over it because they're asking for exceptions. You are correct.
Yeah.
You know, there are different ways to look at this, right? You know, the illumination that comes off of signage can be very low, meaning the overall illumination that's on the site that comes from its regular lighting plan, you know, to have security lighting on site, likely will be brighter than the illumination with the signs, meaning it's not going to add anything to it. The on-site lighting will likely be more just to provide safety lighting, you know, so you can see around the building when it's evening. We can verify that for you. Or you can condition it to have a different type of lighting. I see a lot of the more modern type signage, and they're not very bright. They don't cast. Older ones do, but newer ones don't so much. They don't. You're not getting glare beyond property lines and things like that. Certainly, it can be cumulative, but I think the on-site lighting for the facility, just lighting on the building, even though it's downcast, is probably going to be brighter than the stuff on the signs.
It does look like this sign here with the illuminated part has a little ledge that sort of protects it from the sky, so I'm not too concerned about that.
Okay.
We can have them provide that analysis. I mean, I'm happy to do it. We do it on, you know, larger commercial projects all the time. So
it's once again just there's the aesthetic consideration, there's also the glare, the technical consideration of how we're going to protect the, if we're going to have the dark sky, night sky, you know, regulations or conditions, then I think we need to enforce them, or let's just get rid of them and not, you know, not deal with it. So
I'm not suggesting that we're not following them.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is the illumination that comes along with some of these signs, the more, you know, more modern signage, can be pretty low. You know, to be visible so they can see it. I don't know exactly what the signs are going to look like, and they haven't given us the analysis of what that would be, but I'll stand by what I said. I would imagine the on-site lighting is going to exceed that, so that'll be like, if you measured the illumination that was coming off the site, that illumination would be coming from the lights, without regard to whether the signage is, you know, illuminated or not.
Well, there's also a perceived differential. If something's, you know, back illuminated, you know, you're going to have that perceived perception that it's larger. It's more striking than something that is, you know, objectively illuminated from the exterior. So that's part of the problem too. You know, the other thing too is there's a monument sign that is going to be future. Is that included in these calculations?
Yes.
Okay. So the 110 square feet includes the allowance for the monument sign.
Correct.
Okay. And is that going to be back illuminated, or is that going to be?
It's got to come through the signage permit process, since they didn't include it in this set of drawings.
So that will be staff reviewed or Planning Commission reviewed?
I think typically signage is.
It would be staff reviewed, and so you could also obviously provide conditions related to how you want it lit.
Okay. Okay, so
we've got concerns, and let's go ahead and add to that list. That monument sign needs to be added to the list. The colored concrete needs to be added to the list. The technical evaluation on the menu signs or the rest of the internally illuminated signs needs to be added to that list. The turning radius and the sight angles on the exit needs to be on there, and then also the queuing or the what was the best way to the left turn.
I wouldn't even want to use the word queue. I would just say the left turns into and out of the project, and the safety of the traffic stopping in the street to make a left turn against oncoming traffic.
In evaluated in situ of the of the other streets coming in and the other, the two gas stations right there and the police department also. So anything else that needs to be looked at that list, and then we'll talk about how we want to handle it.
You lost the
good list. Okay. You happy with the list, Susan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about how we want to handle it. Do we want to continue this item and have it come back to the Planning Commission with the revised technical data? Or do you want to have it be staff reviewed and move the project forward?
I'll go first there. So the dark sky ordinance is also, it might be a moral base specific, but I don't think we've amended what CalGreen already requires, right, Scott? So we're just talking about CalGreen?
So that is also in play, correct.
So CalGreen does have foot candle illumination beyond a certain distance standard. So, I think if we just said that the illumination from these displays shall not exceed the dark sky standard, I think that would appease me. I'm not sure how the rest of the commission feels. The turning radius, I am not as concerned about as the rest of the commission, it doesn't sound like. So I would be happy with letting staff deal with that. I am very concerned about the queue of the left-hand turn thing. Or the left-hand turn issue. That being said, I think that's best left in Mr. Leivick's hands and not in this commission's hands, because I don't know what I'm talking about. He's a professional engineer that does traffic studies, so I would want him to weigh in on that. And then the colored concrete, I think that's acceptable to have staff do so.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with all that, specifically with respect to the backlighted lit signs. I think we could satisfy it with some sort of appropriate reading of what the amount of light that's emitted. And I say that because while I share your opinion, particularly with respect to precedent, if we decide, yes, it's okay here, how should we prevent it from other applicants? But that's less pressing because I think we're going to have some kind of a design guidelines with respect to these signs and backlit signs before us shortly. So it's not as though if we insist now, it will run rampant and for years to come. So I would be willing for that kind of compromise for just this one. That's my thought. Yeah. Susan?
I guess if we have staff decide, I would really love to have it come back just to hear what the result was.
I'm happy to report back.
Yeah.
Okay. I can concur with staff's review of the items, so not to hold the project up. But those are my concerns too. And quite frankly, from my personal aesthetics, and is the internally lit signs are tacky.
Yeah,
they're low rent. And we're, kind of tired of Morro Bay being low rent. but we have the main considerations on that also. So do we have a motion? Or where do you guys want to take this?
Joseph? We're making this decision without actually, hearing from the home office, if you will, of the franchisor as to what he thinks in terms of the design of the signs. I mean, it's possible that having a sign that's not backlit would be acceptable to the franchisor, you know, in this locale. I mean, other franchises have made exceptions for specific locations. So I'd like not...
If you go to Carmel, they do not have backlit signs.
So, you know, I think we should try that avenue. I mean, I don't want to... I'm reluctant to delay the process, but I don't want to throw in the towel, so to speak.
If I can kind of offer something up. So, I mean, when I asked staff to look at the Title 24 documents, the verbiage in there. So they're going to be required to do NRCC documents talking about exterior lighting, and they're going to have to do a wattage per square foot analysis of the exterior lighting. And we can, I mean, and the ordinances and the state law is going to dictate that it cannot exceed certain levels. And so I'm pretty comfortable. I mean, and I get that I have a level of comfortability that's a little bit different because I see these forms all day and I know what they say and what they mean. I'm fairly comfortable that Mr. Gabriel can figure out a way to make sure that we're not having Las Vegas down there. So
well, but that's.
But I see new projects going in all the time. You know, with menu signs that you can see from six blocks away.
And there's
a. Know.
Right.
There's a difference between a calculation, objective calculation of how much light is being emitted by a backlit sign, and the aesthetics, the artistic opinion of having a backlit sign, and that's what.
Yeah, and you can take a, you know, for instance, you can take a fluorescent bulb that emits 720 lumens, and you can take an LED bulb that emits 720 lumens, and the LED bulb is perceptively 10 times brighter when you're looking at it because the light source is, you know, much more point-oriented instead of diffuse. So you can be liars, damn liars, and statisticians, you know, so you can take it both. You can work those.
Is it possible to break this down at all? Because one of the things was, do we approve the sign exception, which was more the amount. So, you know, maybe we could say, yes, we're approving the sign exception, but we want the illumination reviewed. And at least that part could be. Is it possible to break it down that way?
Yes, I think it
certainly is. You know, I don't think there's any issue. If the Planning Commission wants to condition the signage as it relates to the exterior signs and let us work on the menu board signs a little bit with them, I think there's a bit of a nuance there. But with the external signs and the standalone sign and have those be externally illuminated, I think that's fine. It doesn't affect how the thing operates. We want to make sure that it operates and functions appropriately as well, and that's part of the analysis I want to do. I think if you leave that part to us, it's great. I think the other regular signs, have them externally illuminated. You know, call it. I mean, you all seem interested because you're all nodding your heads when each one of you talk about it. So that's not a vote, but that's my perception.
Okay.
So I think if you want that, go ahead and ask for it. Just allow staff the discretion to kind of look at the other, which is really just the menu boards, to see what we can do with that.
Okay. So I think I'm comfortable with that. Are you guys comfortable with that? Okay. So do we have verbiage for that, to condition that, or?
So you're asking for those signs to be externally illuminated?
Yes.
So currently I think it's proposed backlit for the wall mounted, and you're saying no backlit signs?
Yes.
Okay.
Internally lit signage, because we're giving, you know, especially because we're giving them, you know, 230%. You know, increase on the exemption, that those signs cannot be internally lit. So, for instance, you know, just as a solution, they could be laser cut and you know, illuminated from the front, so you could still have your same logo and everything. They just cannot have the light shining through the lettering. So. I think that's fine. You guys, okay. So, and then, you know, like the monument sign also needs to be externally illuminated. And then we'll go with staff review on the menu boards.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That works.
And so, just to clarify, is backlit externally illuminated?
Is acceptable.
Okay.
But not transparent. Okay. And then let's talk about the traffic study or the traffic review. What do we have as a condition on that?
Well, I can go through the whole list.
Okay.
So driveway will not be asphalt. You're asking for an alternative to asphalt. And the applicant said that they would consider color-colored stamped concrete. You asked for enhanced directional signage for do not enter and don't block sidewalks. And just for your information, directional signage, which I think both of those would qualify, are not counted towards the signage allowance.
Understood.
All signage to be reviewed to ensure compliance with the dark sky requirements. No transparent illumination for signage other than the menu signs.
Possibly on the menu signs.
Reroute pedestrian access to sidewalk. Consider change in exit driveway design to improve turning movement and review left turn restrictions to the city engineer's satisfaction.
Are you guys comfortable with that? Okay, let's go with the motion then. Who wants to?
I move that we adopt the resolution Morro Bay Planning Commission permit conditional use permit CUP 19-04 and coastal development permit CDP-19013 with the following amendments. I'm not sure if I remember them all, but
conditions
with respect to including colored concrete, the prohibition against internal lighting, additional do not enter signage, and a signage with respect to not blocking pedestrian ways by the driveway. And did I forget anything else?
Reroute pedestrian access and city engineer review and driveway design. And
the latter, okay, and that one.
Okay.
Oh, yes, of course, yes. And that we have some sort of a definitive traffic study opinion with respect to the left-hand turn lane for eastbound traffic.
Okay, sounds good. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion, any further discussion?
Just one little thought to throw out there as we're talking about signs. And just so y'all know, I'm a business owner. I'm a big believer in signage and the importance of it and getting people to your business. I'm also a big believer in positivity. And rather than do not enter, one could say exit only, which is a little more positive. There's a business I won't mention that's in South County that every sign is a no. You know, no carriages, no coffee, no drinks, no what. So phrasing things positively can be good, but it doesn't really matter to me. But just a thought, instead of do not enter, say exit only. It says the same thing, but it's a little more positive.
Yeah. And the other thing we didn't get into is any of the sustainability or green features of the building, but it's such a small building that I didn't want to carry into that. I imagine for your own economic well-being, you're going to be looking into that anyways. So, okay, so much for motion, second, and discussion. Would you like to call the question?
Yes. Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ngrafia?
Aye.
Chair Lohr?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you guys very much.
Okay, item number B2 is CUP 19-10, and that's for 953 Pacific in Morro Bay, and it's the application for conditional use permit for a second-story addition and on a non-conforming single-family home.
Yes. I have to recuse myself from this matter because of a personal connection with the applicant.
Okay. I think we're going to be short. Okay, Scott, you want to handle the staff report?
Sure, no problem. So we had noticed this item before we, you know, started working on the preparation of the staff report for the addition to the single-family home, and realized that the home had been untouched and was well over 50 years old, so requires historical analysis. Fortunate for the applicant, but we spoke with them and let them know this is why they're not here. And so, hence the request in the staff report for continuance of this item to a date uncertain. My understanding in talking with the planner, Willow, is that they're considering even a change to the design at this point. The cost for the historical analysis was quite a bit more than they'd anticipated. And so they may be changing the design, but if not, then we'll bring it back at some point when they bring the design back or have the study, and we're sort of, that's a little bit up in the air at this moment, so hence the reason for the request to continue it to a date uncertain.
Okay. Any questions?
Well, we also need to open it up for public comment, even though
okay.
No, there's no one here.
Any questions for staff? Okay. At this point, I'll open it up for public comment. And seeing nobody out there, I'll close public comment, bring it back to the commission. Any discussion on, or?
No, I really have no comments other than.
Okay. I think we can go move to a motion to continue to a date uncertain.
Sure.
Okay, I'll make a move that we, let me see what we got. We got, somebody else has it available. Go ahead.
Let's see. I move that the request for the conditional use permit CUP 19-10 be continued to a date uncertain to allow time for the applicant to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act.
I'll second it. And we still have a quorum, so any discussion on the motion in the second?
No.
Okay. Please call the question.
Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Luer?
Yes.
Commissioner Ingraffi?
Aye.
Motion passes 3-0.
Okay. Jesse, you can come back now. Yeah. Okay, so we'll take about 2 minutes here, and I'll see if I can go flag him down.
We can talk about him while you're gone. Oh. Okay,
he's on his way, so we'll continue on here. He doesn't have a mic, so he's not going to say anything. Okay, next item is new business, and seeing none. Then also unfinished business. I have nothing listed. And planning commissioner comments and future agenda items.
Any? I could just offer... per that last case there, the Historical Society has been working on a historic preservation ordinance, and they're getting ready with a white paper to present to the planning or the community development department. And one of the things they're hoping is that it goes on the council's next goals setting, goals and objectives. But it was quite a good community group who met and studied it. I do believe Michael was part of it and reviewed lots of other cities. So something I think it'll be exciting for us all to take a look at. And I think, you know, we want to see that character preserved in our town, but also help people see it as an asset and still be able to do renovations so that the buildings aren't falling down and they can live in them, use them, work in them. So,
yeah, the
coming up.
That would be a good conclusion. One of the problems is, further studies, further expenses.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help with affordability of housing or actually, you know, keeping thousands maintained.
That's something I'm sort of hoping we can look at with, you know, maybe we do give people some incentives to go for these designations. If, for example, the Prop 13 law changes that says commercial properties will be assessed at today's rates, and many of our buildings would qualify for this, if the owners are willing to do a historic designation, perhaps that can give them a break on those kinds of property taxes. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it might be something to review, and again, could be a real incentive to, you know, maintain the buildings, maintain the character, give them a reason to not just bulldoze everything, so...
Just one comment. I'm not sure if it's appropriate. Tell me if it's not, Scott. The Quonset Hut project that we had seen many months ago on Main Street seems to have a RV parked in front of it all the time, sometimes with for sale signs, sometimes not. I was just wondering if they were still planning on continuing.
So the last thing I heard is they had come back in with some revisions to the plan. Nancy was the planner on that. I don't think that they've officially submitted for building yet. But I'll ask her. I mean, I'll do a little follow-up note and see what the scoop is.
Okay, and I don't know if they're there during the week or just on weekends, but it seems like every time I drive by there's a big giant RV there, and sometimes they're hanging out in there, sometimes they're not. And I just, right on Main Street. It's just kind of a bad look. So.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Happy to look into it.
I just thought of, is there any more information or developments about that knotty problem of the Harbor Walk in that business?
So yeah, that was one of the things I was going to bring up under director comments. I can bring it up now since you raised the question. I met with Giovanna DeGuermore and Kathy Novak, who's done representation for him for projects in the past. I encouraged them to look through their, you know, their permit history on the site, specifically when we approved the little kiosk out front, and along with that had the requirement for the Harbor Walk to be open at 7:30. They found that requirement, and Gio apologized. He was very sorry. They actually wrote me a letter. Here. It'll be part of the packet I bring back to you about what's going on there. It's also a bunch of pictures of the big hole that's out there in the parking lots. There's a large hole that they're in, that's still in the process of repairing. I'm not sure if they're done. I know they were getting the backfill to put into it and then scheduling their concrete, I think, to come back. But there's a fairly large hole in and around the fuel facility. Not great. So they've been working with the city and county environmental health to deal with the issue. So they got most of it squared away, and now they've got to do the paving. So, yeah, I mean, it ended up taking quite a bit longer to get contractors and stuff out there than you'd initially thought. One of the reasons they still have it partially closed off. But he was aware or did acknowledge the fact that they're supposed to be open at 7:30. Said he will change, you know, the work hours for the folks that come there and open it to make sure that that happens. There's a lot of other stuff in here that's several pages long. But kind of gives you some explanation as to what was going on, you know, there and what was happening with the hole that's on site and the issues that they face. They're getting quite a bit of things stolen out of their facility there. So there's some concern related to that. You know, that would probably be one of the items that he picks up in the staff report that we write as it relates to options for moving forward, gate removal, what the ramification of that is, that type of thing. So, we'll be bringing, again, like I mentioned before, we're bringing that whole thing back. But they were, you know, Gio was great to sit down with. He was, you know, very open, and I asked him to give me a letter, you know, of explanation so that you could see his perspective of things, and you would get it ahead of time, you know, as part of the staff report, as opposed to hearing Gio stand up here at the podium after having had our staff report and our analysis was approved out there. So he, you know, was going to get as fair a shake as possible in front of the commission. I committed to that. He did genuinely seem sorry when I spoke with him about the communication related to when it was supposed to be open. He voiced, "That's my fault. It does say that. I apologize. I just thought it was 8 o'clock because that's when we open." And so I took him at his word. But we'll be bringing back and doing the full analysis on that in February. So,
good. Just a note, it wasn't open today. So, okay. So we're moving on to community development.
I have one other item, and it's the last time I'm going to remind you of this. Yeah. It's the Planning Commissioners Academy. If any of you are interested, probably kind of running down to the end when we can make the reservations. I think you have your reservations, Mr. Barone, Commissioner Barone. If anybody else is interested, please let me know soon. And that's March 4th through the 6th, so that's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It's in Sacramento. I can certainly give you a link if you want more information related to that. Also, at our next meeting, we'll be doing the seating of chair and vice chair. So I want to give some thought to that. I'll probably try to email Michael tomorrow and remind him of that too, so he knows, but that'll be at the next meeting. We do it after we seat the... And as you might be aware, Joe is back on the Planning Commission for another 4 years, signed up for the torture for a little bit longer. Appreciate his enthusiasm. I did a good job at the city council interview. We had some qualified candidates that were there, so it wasn't a for sure thing. I was wondering how it was going to go, for a little bit there. But he did a good job, counted himself well, and they voted him back on. So, well,
congratulations.
Back on the island.
Yeah.
Okay. All I can say is that I fooled people again.
And then Scott, where are we in the queue of? Once again, this brings it up, of commercial design guidelines.
So that's going to be have to be something to do comprehensive design guidelines that gets put back into our we don't have capacity to do them right now, into the next goal setting session. So we do goal setting sessions on the cycle with elections, right? So that's an every 2 year process when we do goal setting. So we have the next upcoming election, so it'll go into that goal setting process. We're back at basically a year out at this point. You're soon going to start seeing all the general plan stuff. So I mean, we're not going to have capacity to deal with it anyway, and I certainly don't internally right now, with all of the work we're doing on the general plan and zoning code and that type of thing, and the housing element now. I mean, you have a full slate of things that you'll be working on and seeing come before you, including the vacation rental ordinance, which we'll probably be seeing your first look at. It'll probably be the second meeting in March-ish. Had the conversation with the city manager this morning and provided him a bunch of information last week related to, some statistics related to vacation rentals to hand it back out to the committee. So,
The process has been really good, though. I think you will get a pretty solid piece of work to work off of, because we've been having the feedback all along with staff, and so I'm hopeful it's it goes through and it's acceptable to Coastal.
Yeah. I better say this now, so I think I'm probably going to miss that 3rd of March meeting because I'm going to be in Sacramento on the 4th. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
just
gotcha.
FYI.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else anybody wants to add? Okay. Then at this point, we'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting, and we'll be here at the Veterans Memorial Building in 209 Surf Street on February 4th, 2020 at 6 p.m. Thank you, everybody.
last of the show and see what it looks like and see what the options are on that one. And that's why I said, hey, with the regular signs, let's just be blunt and say externally illuminated, and we're not even going to have a conversation or worry about it, you know? Yeah, see what we can come up with together. I think that was probably a good way to go.
Cool.
Okay. Hey, yeah.